Thank you very much, Todd, and it's nice to see you here. I want to do a very good job tonight. I want to speak as well as I possibly can. Seema and Candice are not here tonight. Well, they're not here tonight, and I always like to do as good a job as I possibly can when they're not here.
It always happens that.
Yes, and I know that they're listening on the recording of this, and so I'd like to say this is an amazing, there's 150 of you here in the room. I've never seen so many here. It's a pity that they're not here. But in any case, I want to talk only about one quotation from Abdu'l-Bahá. I was reading on the weekend, on Saturday night actually, and I came across this one quotation in a book called The Tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá. And The Tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá is a collection of letters that he wrote. It's four volumes. And there's many things in there that I haven't seen in years, or they haven't been translated officially, and so sometimes you come across something that really strikes you in that book. And I found this, and so I said, oh, I can talk on that for a whole night. So I'm going to read you the quotation, and then let's talk about it for a whole night. And he says this, O ye beloved ones, this is the moment of the ecstasy of the soul and consciousness, and the season of running in the arena of sacrifice. Show ye kindness to all, be ye engaged in the refinement of souls. Become ye as ignited lamps and adorn ye the orchard of being. These days are swiftly passing, and this mortal life will remain fruitless and without result. Therefore, while there is yet time, and the arrow is in the bow, enter ye the chase, and strike ye the game. This game is the good pleasure of God, and this chase is the merciful providence, that is, living in accord with divine instructions. And so when I first read that, I said, hold on, Abdu'l-Bahá is comparing life to a game. First he says, while the arrow is in the bow, okay, and then he says, strike ye the game. And he says, this game is the providence of God. And I was thinking, he's comparing life to a game. And I thought, that's an interesting comparison. I love it when I find an interesting comparison, because you could meditate on that. Abdu'l-Bahá was a master at this. Anytime he spoke about something, he would use some analogy, and when you meditate on the analogy, you come to great truth. So I said to myself, if Abdu'l-Bahá is comparing life to a game, what are the principles of a game? How does it work? How does it function? You know, what are the general principles? So I'm going to ask you first, if you're learning to play a game for the first time, what is the first thing you want to know?
The rules.
The rules of the game. Would you agree? Mm-hmm. Not only do you want to know the rules of the game, but you want to know even more than that. You want
to... How to win.
Oh, yes, of course.
How to play the game.
How to win. These are all things. Some more. What else do you have to know? You want to know what is the purpose of the game.
What is the purpose?
What's the aim of the game? Wouldn't you say that? What is the aim of the game?
And how to bluff.
How to bluff. And if you're Persian, how to cheat. But really, what she's really saying is, how to do everything in your power to win the game. You do this. Okay. So these are some of the things. But the most important thing is you want to know what is the aim of the game. And so this is the first thing you want to know about a game. Now the interesting thing about a game is it has rules, doesn't it? It has rules. And there are certain things that you can do that will help you to win the game. And there's some things that they don't help you at all. So now you think Abdu'l-Bahá says his life is like a game. Then he's basically telling us this life has rules, it has an aim, it has a purpose, and there's certain things you can do that can help you win, and there's certain things you can do that are not going to help you win. So even right there, it's quite important. So that's really the first thing you're going to ask if you approach a game. So we need to learn to approach life in the same way. What are the rules of life? How do we win at life? What do we do that will help us score points? The interesting thing also I find is that in many games, the thing that you get when you do something good are called points. You notice that? Mm-hmm. And the word point is a fascinating word. Because first of all, point can mean the purpose of something. Mm-hmm. As in, what is the point of this? You know, what's the point of that? Point also means a specific spot. And the Bab was called the primal point. Of all the things we could have named him as, he was called the primal point. Because a point is a very important thing. And so I don't think it's any accident that many games, what you do is you gain a point. Because that's the point of the game. So that's the first thing I can see a spiritual analogy that Adibaha is getting at. What's the second thing you want to know once you know the rules of the game and how to play the game? And how to win. Let's say those are the first thing you're going to ask. The second thing you want to know is either what are your tools that you have to play the game or who are your teammates, if it's a team game. If it's a team game, you want to know who you're going to play with and what their strengths and weaknesses are and how they can play. Or if it's a game that requires any tools, like golf, you know, you have a ball and you have a club, or if it's tennis, you have this. In other words, you want to know those things. Would you not agree? Those are essential things. And you're going to want to know, how do I use them to fulfill the aim of the game? How do I use those things? So once again, there's great spiritual analogies in life. What tools do I have, or who are my teammates? And that's really important. Would you agree? Okay, the second thing you want to know, well, who are your teammates, and we use, is who are your opponents? Who are you playing against? Well, you would have to agree, and what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, and so on. These are just normal things that you're going to ask, who are we playing against, or what am I playing against, what am I up against? And so I'm going to pick my own team in the game of life. I'm going to pick a football team, because it has 11. So I'm going to, since Adibaha said life is a game, I'm going to pick my team right now. And here's who I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick these 11 players. Forgiveness. I'm putting him on my team. Generosity. Joy. Radiance. Because we did joy and radiance. Kindness. I think you got to have kindness on your team, wouldn't you agree? Patience. Got to put patience on your team. Helpfulness. Assistance. Love. Humility. And who do you think my 11th player should be? I'm going to go with truthfulness. Truthfulness will be my goalie, I think. He'll protect me. Okay. Now, so I put 11 players on my team. These are the ways in which I can score points, through these 11. And I got on the bench, I've got lots of people. Who I got on the bench to come in and play for me? Name me some other players.
Magnanimity.
I got magnanimity on the bench, ready to come in and substitute for helpfulness. Who else have I got? I got plenty. I've got about, in one prayer,
compassion.
I've got compassion. He's a great goalie. He can come in and play. So these are my players. Now you say, how do you score points? You can score points, in most games, you can score points in more than one way. You know, in football, you might have a field goal and a touchdown and a safety and so on. How do you score points? Well, with your tools, or your teammates, you score points in two ways, and you could sum it up by this simple phrase, and I want you to memorize it. See it and be it. See it and be it. Basically, you can score points with any of these attributes of God if you see it at any time in another person, or you be it at any time with yourself. And each time you get some points. Every time you see one of these things, if you can see forgiveness, if you can see generosity, if you can see joy or radiance in another person, you get a few points. And you have the opportunity to score those points every single time in life you meet a person. There's no chance that you don't have every day. God will give you a few times in life to score points anytime if you'll just learn to see it. Furthermore, if you'll be it. In other words, if you can be generous, or you can be forgiving, and so on. Now, if you meet a person, and you neither see it nor be it, you got no points. Okay,
maybe
you played the game.
Points.
You got, I'm sorry?
Maybe even minus points.
You got no points at all. And yet you had the opportunity, because God will give you the opportunity to score points every single day, every person you meet, every situation you encounter, is an opportunity to score points if you'll just say, see it and be it. And if you can see it and be it, you're even better. Now, I'm going to pick my opposing team now. What is our home team? Forgiveness, generosity, joy, radiance, patience, kindness, helpfulness, assistance, love. Here's what I'm going to pick for my opposing team. Envy, jealousy, selfishness, pride, ego, materialism, money, power, luxury, and this is their best player here, idle fancies and vain imaginations. He's like their captain. And the final player, superstition. Okay, but I'm telling you, there's plenty. Like, prejudice is right on the bench, ready to come out, and plenty of other players. So now, I look at my team, I look at their team, and I think, we're going down. Because that's a pretty tough team. Now, when you play a game, you must know your opponent. Would you agree?
Yes.
You must know what they do. And the biggest mistake in playing a game is to underestimate your opponent. That's the quickest way to lose, because you underestimate. You have to know your opponent, and you have to respect that they have great skill. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want you to imagine right now that you're a quarterback. How many of you know anything about football? Football, there's 11 players. Yeah. There's 11 players, and say you're the quarterback, and you want to throw the ball to one of your teammates. So you've got, you know, forgiveness going out to the left, and you've got mercy going out to the right, and you've got compassion. You've got all your players going out there, okay? And let's say that ego is really covering compassion really well, because the opposing player. And let's say that, let's say jealousy is completely smothering humility or something like that. What do you do when you're a quarterback? What do you look for when you're about to throw in a quarterback? What do you look for?
Opening.
Somebody who's open.
Correct. The quarterback looks for the open man. Why does he look for the open man? Because he can throw the ball to him and he can score points. Now, if the quarterback looks at 9 men and they're all covered, does he spend any time on them? It's a waste of time, isn't it? So the quarterback, they say, check down. Nope, not open. Nope, not open. Nope, not open. Nope, not open. Oh, he's open. Concentrate on him. This is what we should do with people. We should look to the virtue that's open. We look for the humility. So we look at them and we look for their, you know, say, I'm going to, we look for their generosity. Oh no, it's not open. We look for their joy. It's not there. We look for the something. It's not there. But then we see, suddenly humility is there. That's the open man, and we pass to that and we score points. We score points because we didn't concentrate on what wasn't covered. The quarterback can have 9 men not covered, but if there's one that's open, he can score points. He doesn't need them all. So in a way, this is a wonderful analogy. A quarterback looking for the open is a wonderful analogy of how we should treat people. People, many of the opposing players are covering their things. So this is one way we can look at it. Another way to look at it is this. Imagine that God is a pitcher. Every day, God is pitching to you. No, I'm serious. Every single thing that happens to you, God is pitching something to you. He's throwing you a pitch. Now, when you play any game, when you play baseball, okay, there are many different kinds of pitches. There are softballs, and softballs are easy to hit. A softball is very easy to hit. It comes down, but sometimes you don't swing at the softball, because you're afraid, or you think it's a fastball, you think it's something like that, and you don't swing at it. But the softballs are the majority of what God gives you. Every single day, God gives you softballs. They're easy to score points. But I can imagine the sportscasters of life, the spiritual sportscasters, are watching you. Let's just say that they're watching Shad. And they're saying, okay, it's a good day today here in heaven, and we're watching Shad, and he's going to have a meeting with Cambyse. And here comes Cambyse, and Cambyse says, oh, I'm so depressed, I'm so sad today. And then Sportscaster says, oh, what a softball Shad's got, he can knock that out of the park. And Shad says, what, you had a bad day? What about my day? It was even worse. And then now says, oh, what a rookie mistake Shad made. He had the perfect opportunity to cheer him up, and he's got no points out of that. You know, and they say, oh yeah, well, he's a lousy player. And so, I'm joking, but you see, many times it's very easy to figure out how to score points. It's very easy what that person needs, what to give them, or what you can do, or something. Many times God will pitch you softballs, and we need to hit those out of the park. Now, sometimes God doesn't give you softballs. Sometimes he gives you fastballs. They're harder, and occasionally you've gotten a few fastballs pitched at you. But the thing is that you learn to hit the fastballs by first hitting the softballs. You hit those first, and you get better and better and better, and your eye gets stronger and you hit them. Occasionally, God pitches you curveballs. Curveballs are things that you expect to be one thing, and then at the last minute, they do something else. They're deceptive. Now, in baseball, you don't throw too many curveballs, because then you'll be expecting them. Curveballs come every now and then. And so this is God, basically, he pitches us different pitches. And if a pitcher doesn't pitch you different pitches, you'll get used to it and you'll hit everything. Occasionally, God pitches you beanballs. Beanballs, as you know in baseball, are things that just hit you. They hit you in the head or the face. Okay, and every now and then you'll get hit by beanballs. They're the worst. Okay, but the point is the purpose of life is to meet these pitches, is to swing at them, to watch them and concentrate, because you know that you have been given a chance to score points in this game every single day. And if you let a day go by in which you didn't score the points, then you wasted your time. You played the game and you didn't score. Now, every moment of your life now is playing a game, according to Adibaha. There is a point to the game, there are rules to the game, and there's a way that you can win it, and there's ways that you can't win it. And remember, the other team is going to do everything in its power to prevent you from winning it. And it's a really good team. Because you can't have a game if you don't have two teams, would you agree? So God gave us envy and jealousy and ego and pride and selfishness and materialism and money. I can't remember that other team. He gave that to play against us. Be careful, because they're going to try and prevent you from scoring points. In fact, they love to score points. They're a really good team. Now, in every game, there's the way to score the most points. In baseball, it might be the home run. In football, it might be the touchdown. Or baseball, it might be the grand slam. In bowling, it might be the strike. In golf, it might be the hole in one. You know what I mean? I was thinking, what is the way to score the most points? What is the big home run of when God pitches us? What do you think it might be?
Big home run.
Yeah, the big home run. Of just the game. Not the championship or the World Series. We'll come to that later. Okay, but just what is the most points you can score in the game? What would you guess it would be? What would be the home run?
Happiness?
Okay, we'll hold that there. Who's got another suggestion?
I'm sorry? Win the game.
Yeah, win the game. But what is the thing that you can do that will give you the most points, like the home run?
Forgiveness?
You think forgiveness is the home run? Okay, what do you think is the home run?
Love.
Love? That's what I would have thought, yes.
How about joy and radiance?
Joy and radiance, which he said happiness, right? Okay, what else?
To make others happy, too.
To make others happy? Okay, what else?
These are the players.
I'm sorry?
These are the players.
But these are the players, but they're the way you can get your team. You can get your points.
Egoless?
Any others?
She said it's spiritual growth.
Spiritual growth. Spiritual growth, yes. Okay. I'm going to go with this joy and radiance and happiness, but I'm going to sum it up in a particular word which Baha'u'llah said is the source of all good, and it's the word contentment. Joy or contentment. The reason I'm going to go with this is that I found that Baha'u'llah says more than anything else, this is what will bring you closest to God, is that you are content with everything that falls. There's a quotation, I don't know if I brought it with me. No, I didn't bring it, but it doesn't matter. There's a quotation from Shoghi Effendi in which he says, and I think I read it last week, he says that we don't really pray for God to grant us our desires. Rather, we pray that our desires are adjusted to what God gives us. In other words, you don't pray to get what you want. You pray to want what you get. Because that is the highest form of prayer. And that has to do with contentment. So Baha'u'llah says the source of all good is trust in God and contentment with His holy pleasure. So basically, God is testing you. He's like playing tennis with you and He's hitting you a ball to see if you'll be content. And you whack it back and say, I'm happy, God, I'll take that. Then He hits you a harder one. You go backhand and you hit it. Oh, you can't get me there, God. And then He'll hit you something up. And sooner or later, if you don't come back with contentment and happiness, then He won. He's kind of playing you because He's testing you. Now, there's a statement in the Baha'i Writings. It's in the Hidden Words. He says, the true lover yearneth for tribulation, even as doth the rebel for forgiveness, you know, isn't that, and the sinful for mercy. Do you know that quote? When I first read that, I said, don't give me this. The true lover yearneth for tribulation. Why didn't you say the true lover tolerateth tribulation? Or the true lover begrudgingly accepteth. Okay? That's what, you know, that's what you should say. But really, yearneth, the things that you yearn for. Okay, you love like a good cup of coffee in the morning or good food or rest or something, okay. But you don't come home from a hard day of work and say, oh, boy, I really feel like some tribulation. You don't yearn for it, do you? Well, just, you know, give me some more. I'm yearning for it. You don't yearn for tribulation. And yet he said, the true lover yearneth for tribulation. And I think the reason is that tribulation, if you can meet it with a smile and contentment, you get the big points. And the good player, the good hitters, they love a fastball. The really good hitters, they say, give me the fastball, because I can whack it out of the park.
Makes you stronger.
Because it makes you stronger, but they also, you can hit it more. So you get more points if you get the tribulation. So the true lover says, give me your best shot. I'm going to score more points. This may be why the true lover yearns for tribulation, because he wants to prove, or she, the true lover wants to prove their love and get the big points. I'm just going with the analogy. There's another statement which I've read to you before in which I was sure Baha'u'llah was using the wrong word. I was quite sure he was using the wrong word. It comes from the hidden word. And he says, should prosperity befall thee? And I say, sorry Baha'u'llah, no. Befall is something you use for a bad thing. Bad things befall you and you use prosperity. So you got to fix that there if I'm a school teacher. But I'm sure Baha'u'llah wasn't making a mistake. But for some reason, he's using the verb befall for prosperity. So for some reason, he's saying, should prosperity befall thee, rejoice not. And should abasement come upon thee, grieve not. For both shall pass away and be no more. Now, there basically what he's saying is that don't be unhappy when bad things happen to you. But also he's saying don't be happy when good things happen to you. I think that one thing is easier. To be content or happy when a bad thing happens to you is actually easier. You could somewhat realize, okay, a bad thing happens, but I'm going to bear it. But it's much harder when you have prosperity to not be happy, to not rejoice. It's more difficult to do. Would you agree? It's hard. How do you not do it? And yet if you don't learn that if you rejoice in prosperity, you're always going to be hurt by the lack of it. If you like praise and glory, you're always going to be hurt when someone insults you. In other words, if you're attached to the positive joy of having it, you're always going to be hurt by the lack of it. You understand? So when Baha'u'llah says, don't grieve when you're abased, but also don't rejoice when you have prosperity, these two go hand in hand. You can't achieve one without the other. So this is why I decided that the home run or the touchdown was contentment, because of these statements. There's another passage in which Baha'u'llah said, be thankful in adversity. It's in one of the passages. And once again, it's in a passage where he says like 20 or 30 things. Do this, do that. He says, be thankful in adversity. I said, what? No. You want me to get adversity and say thank you? You know, once again, if he had said, begrudgingly accepting an adversity, be tolerating an adversity, you'd say, okay, but are you really asking me to be thankful?
Yeah.
To be thankful in adversity? How many of us are thankful in adversity? You know, we have adversity, God, what a bad day, this is a terrible life. And you should say, well, you should be thankful. You wouldn't say that to the person, but you wouldn't. Okay. Now, so the way I think of it is like this, is that God is pitching to us every day, and the quickest way we can score points is to be content with what he pitches us. Second way is to look at these attributes of God and to see it and be it. And so once again, it comes back to the old analogy. I like to say, you know, that Michelangelo, as I said before, he was considered the greatest sculptor the world has ever seen, or many people thought. And when he sculpted David, which is the great statue, they said it was perfection. Nobody could sculpt like that. And they asked him, how did you do that? And he said it was really quite easy. He said, I took a huge stone and I just cut away everything that wasn't David. That's all I did. I took a huge stone and I cut away everything that wasn't David. And this is what God is doing to us. He's chipping away, cut by cut by cut, everything that is not the perfect man in his image. And he's chipping away at us, and every single day is one of those little cuts. Cut, 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 cut. And I think every pitch that God gives you is one of these things. Furthermore, Baha'u'llah says in the Seven Valleys, it's the path to spiritual truth, he says that when you go through the seven valleys, each valley has its own horse, its own steed. He calls it a steed, but a horse. Now, as you know, a steed is the, or horse is the way that you get through the valley. You cannot get there without it. The steed is the most important thing you need to have to get through. And Baha'u'llah uses this analogy because valleys, to get through valleys, you need steeds. And so these are the most important thing. You've got to have them. They're extremely valuable, the steeds. So the first two valleys, before you can even get to the last five, have two steeds. And what are those steeds? They're patience and pain. The steed of the first valley is patience. The steed of the second valley is pain. Now, I never thought of pain as being a good thing, like you ride it like a horse, that it's a steed that gets you through. And I never thought of patience as being the first steed. But these are related to contentment. You score points because patience and pain are valuable. So those are some of the basic analogies I would think about with sports. Now, what are some of the others? The next thing I think about with any game is that a game has a coach. Would you agree? A game has a coach, or most sports have a coach, and some have more than one coach. And how important is the coach?
Very.
It's extremely important. You need someone that knows how to play the game, knows it better than you, can watch what you're doing, say, do this a little better, and also knows the opponent quite well. Oh, you look out for you know, ego, and then look out for pride, and look out because he's going to do this. So a coach is really important. So who is the coach in the game of life?
Messenger.
I would say it's the messengers of God. Wouldn't you agree? It's the manifestation of God. But to think of him like a coach in life is quite a good analogy. Now, the interesting thing is that most religions have just one coach. In Christianity, Jesus came. And then when he passed away, nobody was quite sure. You know, the Catholic Church, you know, thought maybe it was Peter. And the Protestants thought it was something else. Even in Islam, it wasn't the case. Now, in the Baha'i faith, it's amazing. We had the Bab that came before Baha'u'llah, and he wrote so many books. Then Baha'u'llah came, and even I don't understand why there were two manifestations of God within 9 years apart. Then when Baha'u'llah passed away, we had Abdu'l Baha, which was called the Mystery of God. And he wrote letters and books and so on. Now we've got three times as much as Christianity or Judaism. And then Shoghi Effendi was appointed the guardian, and his writings are voluminous. And then we have the Universal House of Justice. So we have five. Where every other religion had one. We have a basketball team. I use the analogy. In other words, we have a coaching staff. And they all fulfill different functions. And you need this. But the point is that if you want to win the game, you listen to your coach. So this is another analogy that I had. Okay. So these are some of the things that I can see Abdu'l Baha was getting at. But there was one thing that Abdu'l Baha said very specifically, and it's the most important aspect of any game, of any sport. And Abdu'l Baha mentioned it, so I want to ask you, what is the single most important thing about a game? And Abdu'l Baha mentioned it.
Training for it? Practice?
These are all important. We'll come to these later, but
unity.
The most important. I'm sorry?
Unity.
Unity is important, of course. You know, team sport, absolutely. But even more important, Abdu'l Baha mentioned it.
To play a fair and honest game.
Exercise.
That's absolutely. Exercise, very important, I agree.
Humbleness.
Yes, it's very good. But what is the single, if you think about the construct of a game.
Stand up.
It's the single most important concept. Every single game of any type has an end. Remember this, and this is what Abdu'l Baha, that's how we got to it. Every game has an end. Some games have an end relating to time, and some have an end relating to a certain number of segments. You know, a certain number of innings in baseball, a certain number of frames in golf, a certain number of frames in bowling, a certain number of holes in golf, or a certain number of minutes in basketball, a certain number of sets in tennis. All games are limited. They have a finiteness about it. Now, without this, the game has no point. Without having this, there would be no point. If games were limitless, who would do anything? It's the fact that the game is going to end. At the end of the game, a tally is going to be made, and then it's going to be the winner or loser. This is the fundamental. Now, Baha'u'llah says, bring thyself to account each day, ere thou art summoned to a reckoning, for death unheralded shall come upon thee, and thou shalt be called to account for thy deeds. Basically, he's saying, keep score, because the game is going to end. That's really what he's saying. Now, what are the implications of the fact that a game is going to end? Think about it in any sport. The main thing is that if you're behind late in the game, you usually think back to the chances that you had earlier that you failed to score. This is the most common thing that will happen. If you watch any game of any type, as a game gets near the end, the announcers will say, isn't it a pity they did not take advantage of the earlier part of the game? Because that's the time is the omnipresent. It's like a sword of Damocles that hangs over you. Consequently, the fact that the game is going to end is the most important thing. The other thing is that any missed opportunity in a game will come back to haunt you. If you've played any game at all, near the end, and you're now not going to win, it's going to come back to haunt you. Would you agree? Yeah. So this is a very important thing. Because Baha'u'llah says, seize thy chance for it come to thee no more. Now let's go back and read that quote of Abdu'l-Bahá and realize that when he's talking about a game, he's talking about the finiteness, the finishing of the game as being. I'm going to read it to you. He says, these days are swiftly passing, and this mortal life will remain fruitless and without result. Therefore, while there is yet time and the arrow is in the bow, enter ye the chase and strike ye the game. He's saying, while there's yet time, because a game is a construct that involves time. Now, the interesting thing is that now we realize why time exists. Because time is not a reality, we're told in the Baha'i writings. We're told that time and space are part of this world, but they're not part of the physical world, the real world, the spiritual world. Time and space are an artificial thing that was created just for this life. Okay, but many people say, well then why do we have time? Now we know. The purpose of time is to give you a construct in which you are motivated to do something. If there was no time, you wouldn't do anything. In the same way that if a soccer game just lasted forever, we just all have fun. But because you know it's going to end, then that's there. So time is one of the most spiritual things. It is the motivator of life. And so far, nobody's been able to go more than a few extra innings. Some people go a few extra innings, and but that's it. In soccer, I never understand soccer, because they have a little bit of overage, and you never know what it'll be. Is that kind of weird?
Yeah.
They just say, oh, but it's only a few minutes, isn't it? Okay, so this is a very powerful principle in life, to think that we have a certain amount of time on this earth, and every single day we can score points, but sooner or later we're going to end this life. It's like the old joke, they say, why is grandma reading the Bible? And they say, oh, well, she's cramming for exams. And then I think it was, W.C. Fields, he was reading the Bible, and they said, why are you reading the Bible? And he says, I'm looking for loopholes. but the thing is there are no loopholes in the game of life. There's no loopholes here. And you don't want, how many of you have done something, wasted a whole lot of time, and then had to cram at the last minute? Like some assignment you've had to do or some job you've had to do and so on. It's a terrible thing, isn't it? Well, life is like that. Life is like a game. Basically, what I would say, the most important thing is that every minute counts in life. Every minute you have a chance to score some points. What are some of the other general principles that apply to succeeding in a game or any sport? You name me some of them. I've got a whole bunch written here, but you name me a few.
Well,
What would you say is the primary quality that someone good in any game must have?
Some kind of talent. Okay.
Talent?
Skill. Right.
Skill?
Perseverance.
Working hard. I'm sorry?
Working hard.
Technique.
Staying consistent.
Okay.
Fitness.
All of these. They're all important. Practice. Would you agree? But in my opinion, the one that comes first is this attitude that you have. Let's go with persistence. Who said persistence? Someone say that?
Yeah.
Or let's go with continual focus and concentration. You know, they say keep your eye on the ball or stay focused. It's a mental game first and a physical game second. And any athlete of any sport will tell you it's mental first. There's an inner game and there's an outer game. And the inner game requires you to constantly be focused on your purpose. Constantly be focused on your purpose. Because even in games like chess, believe it or not, if you study the Russian grandmasters, it's an inner game. They try to psych out their opponent. You know, they try to use psychological techniques to trick. No, they're really good at it. Because even a game that you think is purely skill, there's an inner component. But in sports, if you look at any high achiever in sports, you look at, you know, in basketball, football, baseball, anyone that's really at the top, you will say, oh, they are brilliant in their body, in their fitness, in their ability. But you also see that they're also brilliant in their focus and in their intensity and in their persistence. And in a way, you don't really know if their physical ability came first or that came first. It's like the old saying, Fritz Kreisler, who was the greatest violinist, he could play violin like nobody, and a woman came up to him and said, I would give my life to be able to play violin like you. And he said, Madam, I did. You see, a lot of times we think someone is naturally gifted at something, but they're not naturally gifted. They had the persistence, they had the drive, they had the dedication. So I would put that first. Secondly, though, right under that, is what I would call eagerness or enthusiasm. Okay, you have to have this. Now the interesting thing is there's three words I find in Baha'u'llah's writings that he says are essential to spiritual life. And they are these three words, eagerness, enthusiasm, and thirst. Go in the Baha'i writings and type these words, and over again, Baha'u'llah says, if you don't have this, you're not going to make it. Okay, for example, in the Kitab-i Yagan, he says you have to take certain steps. And he says, only when the lamp of search... Read these are the things. He says, only when... He means that nothing else can happen until this happens. So he's putting primacy on a certain thing. And I'm going to read you them and tell me that not all of them have to do with eagerness or enthusiasm. Okay. It says, only when the lamp of search, of earnest striving, of longing desire, of passionate devotion, of fervid love, of rapture and ecstasy, is kindled within the seeker's heart, and the breeze of his loving kindness is wafted on his soul, will the darkness be dispelled. I could be in the locker room with a football coach and I could use those same words. I could talk about longing, desire, and passion, devotion, and fervid love, and rapture, and ecstasy. In other words, these are the things he said you need first if you're going to get it. In another place, he said that you will attain spirituality, he says these words, in proportion to the eagerness of your search. He says, in proportion to the eagerness of his search. And this is a very interesting thing, because you gain your rewards in proportion to how eager you are. Now think of what sport you like. Think of the people that are the highest achievers of that. And you'll find that they practice more, not less, than the other people. They work harder, they think longer, they watch more film, they study more history of the game. And yet they're the best. They should do it less, not more, but they don't. Because what came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it the desire, the eagerness, and the talent, or was the talent that led to that? No, I think it's the desire and the eagerness. Okay, that's just my own feeling. Remember that Baha'u'llah said there were four qualities that he likes to see in people. We've talked about this before, haven't we? And one of the qualities was face wreathed in smiles, which was joy and radiance. Another one of the qualities was that you see a task through to the end once you begin it. And another one of the qualities was that you see with your own eyes and not with the eyes of others. Those were three of the four. But what was the first one? Does anyone remember? It was enthusiasm and courage. I'm going to read it. The Blessed Beauty often remarked, there are four qualities which I love to see in people. First, enthusiasm and courage. That was the first one, and it was enthusiasm. So that's what he wants. And of course, the word enthusiasm means en-theo. Theo means God. Enthusiasm means God within. That's the original meaning, because enthusiasm means to have God within. And enthusiasm and courage. So this is a very important thing. Furthermore, Baha'u'llah often quoted from the poet Rumi. You know the poet Rumi? And how many of you have read Rumi? Have you read him in English or in Persian? Yes. Rumi, this was his main theme. His main theme was desire and thirst. There's many, like it was one of the primary themes. Maybe they didn't have a lot of water in Persia, I don't know. But thirst was his main thing. And there's one famous poem from Rumi, which Baha'u'llah quoted. Baha'u'llah quoted often from Rumi and Hafez. But he quoted from Rumi, and it's this quote. It says, seek not the water, but thirst. And from the very ground the water will burst. So basically he's saying, don't go looking for water. Just thirst for water, and the water will come to you. And that was one of Rumi. And another famous poem from Rumi, he said this. He said, not only the thirsty seek the water as well seeks the thirsty. You know, he was very, very into this thing, that thirst will bring everything unto you. In other words, you don't have to find the water, you have to so thirst for it. And the more you thirst for it, then the water comes to you. It's a deeply spiritual concept. So Abdu'l-Bahá talked about the word thirst as well, and he used the very same words as Rumi did, thirst. But he said there's a way. I'm going to read this. Someone asked Abdu'l-Bahá, how do you become spiritual? And he said, I'm going to read you now. The first thing to do is acquire a thirst for spirituality. Mm-hmm. Notice he didn't say the first thing was to do something. The first thing was to have a thirst. You're going to do something later. The thirst precedes. So he says, the first thing to do is acquire a thirst for spirituality. Then live the life, live the life, live the life. And living the life, it means doing all the things, all the virtues. Then he says, the way to acquire this thirst is to, and now you're getting excited, because he's saying, you have to do something, but in order to do that, you have to do something first. And the way to do that first thing is something else. So you see what he's doing here? So you're getting excited now, because he's giving you a path. So he says, the first thing is to acquire thirst. The way to acquire this thirst is to, and now he's going to tell you the way to get the thirst. What do you think it might be? Who can guess? And if you know what it is, don't answer, if you know what he said. But if you had to guess, Abdu'l-Bahá says, the first thing is to acquire thirst. The way to acquire the thirst is to, what do you think it is? Guess. Somebody guess.
Acquire knowledge.
Acquire knowledge. That's how you get the thirst. Who has got another one?
Pray.
Pray.
Meditation.
Meditate.
Act as if you have it.
Act as if you have it.
Do away with superstition.
Do away with superstition. Good. Yes, Baha'u'llah talks about that as one of the important things. What else? And this was an answer to, somebody said, how do you become spiritual? And so basically he's giving you, this is your coach, this is your head coach, or your assistant coach, because Baha'u'llah is your head coach.
Pure intention, I think.
Pure intention, you think. Okay, I'm going to read you the quote now.
Okay.
The first thing to do is to acquire a thirst for spirituality. Then live the life, live the life, live the life. The way to acquire this thirst is to meditate upon the future life. To meditate on the future life. He's coming back to this time thing. This time thing, that this life is finite, it's going to end, and we're going to go somewhere else. Is not time the thing that gives the thirst to the athlete in any sport? The fact that we have only 9 innings, or we only have 3 sets in tennis, or we only have 10 frames in bowling, is that not the motivation? Otherwise, why would you bowl anything? You know, who cares? But when they know that this game is going to be over, or you have 4 quarters in football, that is the motivator. That's how you get the thirst. So the point is that as long as we are not aware that this life is going to end, and we're going to go somewhere else, and a score is going to be tallied up, As long as we don't think about that, we don't have that thirst. As soon as we realize that this life is a game that's going to end in the fourth quarter, and there's going to be a score taken, we have that thirst. He's basically saying the way to get that thirst is to meditate upon the future life. Consequently, the game analogy is very, very powerful. It's more powerful than you realize. Now, what is another really important principle of any game? What is another important principle of any game?
A place to play it.
Okay, location to play it, but I didn't have that, yes, of course. But
not to cheat.
Not to cheat, very good, I'll accept that. Not to cheat. And you can't really cheat in this game. If you do cheat, you're not going to get any points.
The referees are pretty tough.
They're going to take it away. I think that the next thing that you have to worry about in a sport is that you have to have some kind of strategy. And you have to think very carefully about how to beat your opponent. Would you not agree? You have to think very carefully. Anybody that wins at a game, they think long and hard about their opponent. Now, who are our opponents again? Let me go back to our opponents.
Envy,
jealousy,
pride. I put on my team. I just picked my team really quick. Envy, jealousy, selfishness, pride, ego, materialism, money, power, luxury, idle fancy and vain imagination, superstition. I could pick another 11 and they would just all be good. You need to know these players really well because they're really good players. They're really good and they're very tricky. Often you end up playing for them instead of playing for your team. No, I'm serious. Often they trick you into playing on their team. They do all the time with power and money. And like let's say you spend half your day going after power or money. You were giving points to the other team. You were taking the basket and going down the wrong end and shooting it in their basket. Did you understand? You can do that in most games. You're playing for their team. Now, you need to think very carefully about how to beat these opponents. That's what strategy is in a game. Let's say you're playing baseball, and they say, okay, coming up to the bat now is ego. And all the crowd roars because ego is a great batter. Not only is he a great batter, but he thinks he's even better than he is. Okay. So ego, he comes up to bat, right? And they say, ego's at the bat. Okay, and you say, well, who are we going to pitch to ego? You know, what are we going to do? Are you going to give him humility? No, he'll whack it out of the park. Well, maybe we'll give him joy and radiance and trick him. In other words, you've got to use strategy. In any game, you do that. In basketball, you say, well, who's going to guard who? Yeah, and sometimes even the finest little adjustment can make all the difference in winning or losing. Now, if someone plays a game, look how much work they do to concentrate on that game. They're thinking about it night and day. Look at any sport or any athlete. They'll get up in the morning and they'll run 2 hours. They'll go in the gym and spend an hour. They'll go and watch film. They put a lot of effort and energy. It puts us religionists to shame. Would you agree? The amount of dedication they put into that is immense. And yet that's just a game. This is a game that really counts. This is a sport that really matters. And yet look how much dedication and energy they use. You take any great coach, and he's written a book, you know, Vince Lombardi or John Wooden or Pat Riley or Phil Jackson. Read their books, and every statement is based on motivation and drive and desire, and everything is a spiritual point. Because a game is a tremendous analogy. So I would say that the first thing you need is strategy. So we say we have a game in life. We got to beat ego. And he's a hard player. How do we beat him? Okay, yesterday I tried this and he just whacked it out of the park. So you've got to work at it. You have to have strategy. What is another thing that you need when you play a game? It's very important.
Spectators?
You don't need spectators. You need resilience. Resilience. What is the quality of resilience? Resilience is the ability that when you fail, that you get up and try again. Essential quality to any form of game. In fact, well, okay, we'll come to that. We've got all of them. You need resilience. Resilience means that when you fail, you keep trying. You never lose heart. Now, all the good athletes, it doesn't matter if they strike out, they go up and back. But, or in any other sport. In fact, there's a famous quote by Mickey Mantle, who was one of the greatest hitters in all of baseball. You know who he was? Okay, he once said a quote. He said, I worked out how many times I struck out. It was 1,700. And how many times I walked and how many times I didn't get a hit. He added it up and he says, I divided that by the total number of games I played. And he says, I worked out that I spent 7 years of my life when I didn't get a hit, when I failed. 7 total years. He worked it out because baseball is very statistically oriented. And even other players like Babe Ruth, you know, he had the most strikeouts of any player in history. We don't care about it, do we? Because they had resilience. It didn't matter how many times they failed. They kept persisting and they kept trying. Even the greatest baseball hitter in history was Ted Williams. And his batting average was 400, or around about 400. That means that 60% of the time he failed. And we consider him the greatest. Most batters, if they fail 70% of the time and they have an average of 300, they're considered a Hall of Fame player. In other words, we say he's a 300 batter, we might as well say he's a 70% loser. That's in reality. And it's true in any sport. But because they have... Now, if you get downhearted or fail... In other words, spirituality requires constant struggle and never letting it get you down. So I would say that resilience is another quality. Many, many other qualities in sports, because there's a deep analogy in the game, because life is a construct. Bahá'u'lláh, in another passage, he talked about life being like a play in a box. Do you remember we read that? Mm-hmm. It's another, didn't we read that?
Yes.
Okay, it's another way of looking at it, because a play is a limited thing. This life is a construct. But when Abdu'l-Bahá compared it to a game, I'd never seen that before until Saturday night. I was reading. I said, "Game! Oh, come on, nice one, Abdu'l-Bahá." I said, "That is such a beautiful analogy," and we could spend all night here making comparisons. And for a while, I said, "Okay, well, I can think of some kind of silly analogies." Like I was thinking, baseball is the most spiritual sport. I said, because first of all, it has 9 players on a team. Okay. Secondly, it has 9 innings, you know. And thirdly, you start out at home and your goal is to get back home, which is like you come from God and unto Him shall return. I said, baseball. Wow. Furthermore, baseball was invented in 1845, just within a year of the Bob declaring, and the inventor of baseball died in 1892, the same year Mao Zedong. So I knew all this. I knew this. So I said baseball has got to be the most spiritual sport. Then I said no. Golf is more spiritual. Golf, you have 9 holes when you go out. 9. And you have 9 holes when you come back. You end up 18 holes just like the letter of the living. And furthermore, golf is played on the Holy Land. Because it's got holes in it. Okay? So I said, golf has to be the most spiritual. Then I said, no, bowling is more spiritual. Bowling is more spiritual. Because bowling, you have 9 pins in bowling? No, it's 10 pins. But bowling is on an alley. And Bahá'u'lláh's name was Mirza Hussein Ali. And the Bob was Ali Muhammad. So we have 2 Alis. So I said, bowling has to be the most spiritual. Then I thought, no, tennis. Tennis has to be the most spiritual of all sports, because before you can play, the score is love all. And the best players are those that are good at service.
That's right.
They have a service. Okay. So I said, tennis has to be the most spiritual. And then I thought, no, these are all minor analogies. These are all just ones that we can have fun.
Cricket.
Oh, well, we don't know cricket, but...
No, cricket's the 5-day game.
Oh, cricket's a 5-day game.
And
so
it gives you a sense of...
Of eternity, of the next world. So, yes, all, if you're in Australia...
How about basketball? Lakers has world peace on it.
Oh, yes, but yeah, well, I could do both. But all I was saying is that you could sit and make all these analogies, but really, those are just the minor analogies. The major analogies are these. Number one, a game has a purpose. A game has, there are specific ways in which you can score in a game, and there are particular ways to win and to lose. Okay, there's an aim to every game. So that is a really powerful analogy. That's the second one, is that a game has a limited time. This is so deeply spiritual. You have to get it done by the end of the game, and the game will end for sure, just as your life will end for sure. These are the major analogies of a game. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
That they have rules, that there's a way to win and lose, and that it has a time. So I want to read this quote one more time from you, from Adi Baha, that I read at the beginning. And now that we understand how spiritually apt this analogy is, I want you to read this again, because even early in the quotation now, you realize he's using game analogies. He uses words like running and arena. He's using game analogies even earlier in it, and you don't realize until he gets to it. So I'm going to read it again. O ye beloved ones, this is the moment of the ecstasy of the soul and consciousness, and the season of running in the arena of sacrifice. Show ye kindness to all, be ye engaged in the refinement of souls. Become ye as ignited lamps, and adorn ye the orchard of being. These days are swiftly passing, and this mortal life will remain fruitless and without result. Therefore, while there is yet time, and the arrow is in the bow, enter ye the chase, and strike ye the game. This game is the good pleasure of God, and this chase is the merciful providence, that is, living in accord with divine instructions. I've read the Baha'i writings for 40, 50 years. I've never seen this analogy anywhere else. Has any of you seen it?
No.
So it struck me as being interesting, and it's a perfectly apt analogy. In fact, we can learn a whole lot about motivation, achievement, from people that are high achievers in a game. So that's why I thought I'd use it. Any other comments? No, I want to say
the quotation is from which?
It's called The Tablets of Abdul Baha. It's now in one book. It used to be four volumes, but now you can get it in one book, and it's online as one volume. So if you go to Tablets of Abdul Baha and then type game. But I found as soon as I read that on Saturday night, that I've been going over my head over and over again, and really it has given me a completely different perspective on life. It really, it's a game changer, no pun intended, about life, because to think of life as something where you have to score points, and you've got opponents that are trying to score points on you, and you have to defeat those opponents, and the game is going to end and they're going to take score. Those basic overarching concepts are really quite powerful. And now I don't think I can watch any sport game anymore without making it spiritual. Which is good, because I now won't feel so guilty when I watch it.
Especially God. Also uses an analogy in another prayer. The life is a party.
Yes.
It is the time now to play an instrument, to clap. And
it is the time or not the time?
It is the time.
Yeah.
And if you're not clapping, and if you're not singing, and you're not dancing now, when are you going to be doing this?
Yes. In other words, there are certain things to be done in this life that you have to do now. And of course, Baha'u'llah also uses the analogy of the baby in the womb. That's another, and there are many different ways to look at life. And interestingly, baseball has 9 innings, and the baby in the womb has 9 months. Have you noticed that? What is that?
Not going to let that go, are you?
No, it's very interesting, because you got 9 months in the womb. You can't say, oh, so I love this womb, I'm going to spend a few more months. You can't do it. And Baha'u'llah says this life is like the baby in the womb. You have to do the job that you have to do in the womb during that time. There is a limited, finite period of time in the womb. And this is another analogy. So there are many, and this is what he says, do what you need to do in this life. And so that quote is good. I want to get that quote. I'm going to get this quote. I'm going to work on this, because it's a very powerful spiritual concept. Yes?
No, I'm trying to say what he said. I'm trying to remember what this is.
Yeah, I've never seen that quote, but if you can find it, let me know.
The quote is a prayer, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is a prayer.
See, you have many things in Persians that we don't have.
And he especially names the instrument. Yes. Daphnis, and you, which Daphnis is a special.
Daphnis
is this
one.
Chang Nazan.
Okay.
It's
Daphnis,
the big one.
He said, if you're not playing that, when else are you going to do
it? It's a beautiful, beautiful concept. Maybe it doesn't translate well into English.
I'm sure that has been translated.
Oh, yeah, if you can find it, yes.
So, you know, you talked about this game and people playing the game. What happens when you don't get a chance to play?
What do you mean when you don't get a chance to play? Like
the game of life.
In this game, we all get a chance to play.
What happens if you know, as a child, you don't get a chance to continue?
You mean that the game is called short? Let's say rained out.
Yes.
This is a very interesting thing because it shows you the value of this life. It shows you the value of this life, that it is so valuable because it's a chance to score points. Now, Adibaha was asked this question about the suffering and the death of children. And he basically, I can bring that quote, I don't have it with me, but he basically said, don't worry, God has a way of making things right. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's some way that God has a way of making things right. So I don't think we should worry too much. But this is why, obviously, suicide is prohibited. Yeah. This is why murder is prohibited. This is why human life is considered sacred. Because life is really, really a great gift. It's an opportunity of priceless value. And so that you can gain it from that. Because, you know, God has given us a chance. You know, if you're on a team and you're sitting on the bench, because all teams more sit on the bench than play. Okay, so you know, there's 15 or 14 in basketball and only 5 are playing. Or in football, it's like 50 and only 11 are playing. So when you're called up to play, that's what we all are. We have been called off the bench to play the game. Because if you've been put in this life, you've been off the bench. Your number has been called. You know they say, call your number? Mm-hmm. We're all in the game. Everybody else is up there saying, I wish I could, coach, put me in the game. Okay, but we're in the game, and we're playing. And it would be a real pity if the game ends and they say, what an idiot, you had so many softballs pitched at you, and you didn't hit them. That's really, that's what I get from Adibaha when he says, while the arrow is still in the bow. It struck me, no pun intended, it struck me very hard that, oh my gosh, I am in a game, every minute counts. That's what I got from that quote, personally. So I think that's enough, and I'm glad that Seema and Cambise were not here. Because once again, it's 150 people here tonight. I can barely see all of you out there.
The first time you read this quote and the last time you read it, it made such a difference. All the explanation. Thank you so much.
Okay. Oh, very good. Thank you.
I wanted to say this was fabulous. Really wonderful. Thank you so much. But also, I'm sitting here thinking, well, we are all still young. We're all young people sitting here listening to you. We still have a lot of chance to play the game.
Yes.
If you haven't played the game to its best,
right,
that you could have.
Still can score a few points.
How wonderful would it be for you to give this talk to our young people, our teenagers, who are just starting off in the game?
Yes.
And how many more points can they
score?
So, I'm thinking it would be a wonderful opportunity if our hosts who are, and Cambise and Seema, who are in charge of putting these meetings together, could, for you, to arrange something for the youth.
Oh, sometime I'll do it, yes.
Thank you. This is a wonderful one to do for you.
Yes. Yeah, because they like games. Yeah. So you might as well go with it.
Can
How can you turn this off?
You can't. It doesn't
work. Okay. Because
it was never on to begin with.
Cambise, you wanted it.